Session number 8327.
Mr. Barrow, tape 7. This is interesting, Mr. Barrow. You were saying it's the only occasion you saw a man tied to a limber. Could you tell me about that?
Well, that would be, you know, that was first field punishment. And you know, I've no doubt that quite a number of people in France and on Gallipoli, I'm quite certain they'd be shot for cowardice.
But what was this first field punishment? What did it look like?
I think that was the lesser punishment below being shot. And it would be 90 days. That's 3 months, isn't it? 3 months hard labour. And this man, every day he'd be tied up to these limber wheels for probably 2 hours every day. Saw him for some time, and then I suppose he'd worked out his punishment. He might not have got 90 days. He might have got a month or a fortnight or 10 days. Perhaps with pay stopped or something like that.
Was that a very degrading thing to
be
tied?
Oh, yes, he was just tied like this to the wheel.
Yes, how did the rest of the troops react to it?
Well, I thought, well, I don't know that they took very much notice of it, but it was a general thing, I suppose. It's an old survival of being tied to a gun wheel. But they had no guns, so they tied him to one of the limbers that was knocking about, and that happened to be ours.
How about in your own unit? Did you yourself ever get into trouble?
Oh, yes, we're giving cheek to these sergeants.
And what did they do to you?
Late on parade in the morning. You know, you perhaps slept away and you'd be tired, perhaps didn't hear the whistle. And, they give you 10 days fatigues or something. I think I totted up about a month until the officer, Major Bentley, who was in charge of the whole unit, the field ambulance themselves and the drivers, the whole unit, got to know about this, and he was a bit annoyed. He said he was the man to punish anybody, and they wiped the slot out.
You were lucky.
Yes, it wasn't very much really, just perhaps doing a couple of hours a day helping the cook or something. But the sergeants didn't like me for it. I'd probably given a bit of cheek to this sergeant. There was a Sergeant Ford who was a cocky little devil, and this Kelly was as Irish as the bog, so we probably didn't match up right. So that was it.
Did you ever go back to Gallipoli?
No, I'd have liked to, but I never went back.
Do you belong to the Gallipoli Association?
No.
You heard of it?
No. Never heard of it. I never heard of it, much about it. I attended one or two unit places, but they weren't Gallipoli ones. I attended one of the units, the original ones of the 42nd Field Ambulance Brigade in Manchester, where I met a few of the original ones, and one perhaps or two men who'd been on Gallipoli with me, but who went off sick or something. And then I was quite at home with the REs. I was very happy with the REs.
Yes. Could you quickly tell me something about the REs? Because I understand you changed your regiment,
didn't you? Yes,
the
time expired,
you
see. And I had the option of coming home and joining up again and joining any unit I wanted to.
Why did you choose the REs?
I don't know. They were smart-looking people, you know.
Had they done a good job on Gallipoli? You know, were you
and
impressed with
them? I never knew
anything
about them, really. No. Never knew. Except they were, when we were on the canal, they were very close to us. And they seemed a smart lot, well turned out, better than we were. And they seemed as... So they were very well disciplined.
So what date would you have joined the REs?
Pardon?
When would you have joined the REs, do you think?
I should think... See, we came up in 1916, didn't we, and went along to the canal at a time. We went up to Mina Camp for a time. I think that was it. Anyway, I should think I joined the REs probably in about, July or August 1916, I should think.
Did you then have to undergo a period of training with them?
Well, it was more or less the same work I was doing there, driving with tool carts and pontoons, boats, you know, boats on biggish wagons, limbers, you know, the little ones, and just as it was the same work, really. And then we had camels, and they carried corrugated iron and water pumps.
This would have been in the Egypt
sphere, wouldn't it? This would have been on Sinai.
Yes, because you didn't go into Palestine, did
no.
you?
No. No, it was up from Kantara. And in those days, Kantara was one of the few places where you could get vehicles or anything across the canal. And it was a hand-drawn boat, a barge, on chains. And anybody who was punished in the units was sent to pull these chains across, pull the barge across on these chains. And they were quite big, these barges, right? Bigger than this room, I should think. And the camels would go across on them, and all sorts of vehicles, or small vehicles, I should think, and men, goods. And then in the end, well, Kantar is a fantastic place now, you know. It's quite a town, and a proper bridge and everything. Of course, that's all happened probably many years ago, after I left, of course. Otherwise, that was the only way you could get across the canal, I think. Except perhaps at Port Tewfik, that was the one end, and Port Said at the other, Port Suez. Of course, we had a very easy time on the canal, you know, with nothing much to do. Same old game, rations, and bathed a lot in the canal.
Did you see much evidence of fighting or skirmishes while you were in that area?
In the
canal area, yes.
Not very much. We eventually crossed over, and there was a battle of Romani, which was at like the first real skirmish again, I should think, with the Turks. There were patrols and that sort of thing, but I think that was the chief battle, the Battle of Romani, which our division took part in.
Could you tell me what you saw of that?
Well, we didn't see anything of it because we were in the rear of it, really.
Did you have to sort of take stores up? Provisions are?
Not especially. I didn't know much about it, really. They'd have to have stores. I think Romani wasn't very far on the other side of the canal, and I think they would attack from this. They would attack from this side. They wouldn't have a base, really, as such. They used to sweep the ground at night to smooth it all off and notice if there'd be any activity of anybody on this smooth ground.
Who used to do that?
Well, the infantry would do it, back with a camel and a couple of heavy sleepers, perhaps, to drag it to sort of backwards and forwards to smooth it. And the men would do it as well, you know, probably.
Did you see any of the results of that battle at Romani?
No,
were there any casualties?
Nothing. No, I don't think we saw anything. There would be some casualties, but it'd be better organised then, I should think.
How about El Arish? Did you know anything about that battle?
No, very little, really. The Australians would be in it, I should think. They were the cavalry, you see, they could cover ground more. And a lot of camels, there was the Camel Corps, I don't know if they were if they were armed, possibly some of them were, but we didn't see much of it. It was the same old game, carrying goods of various degrees, and I had a good job for a time. I was a chief engineer's runner, they called it, and my own horse, and just a freelance. I grubbed, I don't know where I got the grub from, but I must have grubbed with the CRE's cook place, you know. I think there was only one or two horses on the line. The doctor had one, and probably the adjutant had one, I had one, the CRE had one. I was just at his beck and call to run messages, really. 24 hours a day, sometimes it'd be in the middle of the night or morning, but not much to do. And I had a lovely horse that I used to take in the sea, and it used to swim about with me. And then somebody pinched that off me, and I got another one that was sent up from the base, and it wouldn't eat at all. It was fretting so much. And I think that was the end of the job when I had to get rid of this horse that wouldn't eat, I think. Perhaps I got another one. I've forgotten.
So it sounds as if you had quite a good time in the desert.
Egypt.
How long were you there before you were then sent off elsewhere?
Well, we were there, and then I think we left the desert and went to France, probably in February, I should think. Something like February 1917. We went to Marseilles. And then a troop train up to outside Paris. About 60 hours in the train.
What was that like?
It wasn't very good. It was very cold, but we'd been issued with those very thick underwear, you know. That mottled bluey stuff. And it tickled you to death. But still, it was warm.
Did you have any leave in this period? I mean, after all, you went to Gallipoli and...
Only once. I had a week in Alexandria, at Sidi Bish, I think it was, at Sidi Gabba, where you lived in tents, no discipline. You could we're just by the sea. We could just walk out of the tents and bathe, go to the cookhouse and get some grub. I think we only had one roll call a day. And we're free to go into Alexandria and perhaps have a drink if you fancied it, or bits of something to eat, look round the shops and the docks and things. And
but no chance of getting to Blighty?
Oh, no, never had a... Only had one leave in all that time from France. I had a two, I've forgotten now. Forgotten. I know I was home just about the harvest this time. Perhaps it was, and they didn't make a fuss of you then.
You were the hero, were you?
No, they didn't make any fuss of you. You know, there are millions of us. But that ain't the time before. I must have had a leave the time before from France. Yes, I must have had. Because I came home. And mother hadn't been out. I'd sent her a word that I was due for leave. I'd be home any time. Well, that was a bit of a laugh. I was calling to the office at the unit, the REs, a nice fellow, adjutant. His mother said, "Look at you, Barry." He says, "You're down for a commission. Your leaves will be. You're due to Blighty leave." And you can leave on 10 days Paris leave. You can leave it now if you like. I said, "Well, what would you do?" "Oh," he said, "go to Paris." So I went to Paris for 10 days. And eventually I was sent to a unit, the RFA unit, RFA for this commission trial business. See if I was, I wouldn't have one in the infantry. I'd refuse that. I wasn't very keen on it. Anyway, I stuck it at this unit of the battery, C210 battery, and stuck it. My month was up, and no word came through. I saw the major in charge, and my own major in charge, and said, "Well, you're more or less saying that I was fed up and I'd rather come back to my unit." Oh, he said, "I shouldn't come back. You've got a very good report." I wasn't very keen on the commission anyway. I was happy where I was. So I stuck it again for about another month, I suppose. And fortunately, in a way, it was a marvellous experience, because in the March of 1918, it was a terrific advance on the Germans' part, and it was nearly curtains for everybody. But however, the troops rallied and everything. We were nearly collared.
Where were you then?
Oh, I don't know where I'd be. Round, I think it'd be round Swazong or somewhere. I just forget exactly where we were. But anyway, the attack, the German big attack, petered out, and they got re-established again. And eventually, when would it be? It would be about November, October. I should think it'd be about August, something like that, when we attacked and we broke through the Hindenburg line. That's not so late on us, not so early as August, but we broke right through the Hindenburg line and battered away, I suppose. Took a lot of prisoners and did a lot of casualties. And eventually, of course, the armistice was signed on November the 11th. And by then, I think we were either at Mons or Maubeuge. I think it would be Maubeuge, which are in the Mons area in Belgium. And then eventually we settled down in Charleroi. That was in Belgium. And we eventually got discharged in March 1919.
Well, you certainly had variety in the war, didn't you? Gallipoli,
yes.
And then the Suez Canal, and ending up in France.
Yes.
How was it a big shock to go somewhere like France after your previous experiences?
Well, of course, it was so different.
Was it? How
and
was
so
it
cold.
Different?
Well, it was so cold to start with.
You noticed that, did you, the weather?
I don't know where we went. We landed near Paris, a place called Le Pril, and they sorted us out. I don't know where we'd go. No, and then we went to Havrincourt. Havrincourt Wood was a noted place. Very nice in the summer, that was. And the troops were in front of... It was a big forest with Havrincourt. And I was with the REs then, and the sappers and the infantry were on the trench system on the far side of the wood, and we were this side. We used to have to take rations and oddments up through the wood, water, and through the wood to the sappers who were engaged in their job of trenching, making trenches and saps, as they call them, and general directing the infantry to do the work. What does it say? God made bees and he made honey. The infantry do the work and the RE's got the money. I think the RE's got about half a crown a day and the infantry got about 1/6. But they were a happy crowd, the RE's. Very good discipline. Very good. Marvellous sergeant major.
Was your life much more dangerous in France, though?
Oh, I think
because
so.
Because you were doing basically the same work, weren't you, transport?
Aye. Very much more dangerous. Very much more. There was always shelling, you know. Always shelling. Fortunately, we never suffered many casualties, but been like going through Ypres and up to Ypres. It was a devil of a game, you know, in the middle of the night.
What did it look like by that time, late in
Ypres,
the war?
Oh, it was well battered. the famous cloth hall, as we were going past one night, all a shell had come and hit the wall, and explosions, and it'd be chaotic on the roads. All the infantry transport and the artillery taking shells up, you know, quite a lot by roads and pack ponies. And the whole place was a morass of water and shell holes. Terrible place. Terrible place for Ypres. But we didn't have many casualties, one or two in the sappers perhaps. And then we moved up to Newport, which was a unique place rather.
In Belgium, that is.
In Belgium, on the coast. Nice little place behind the lines at Le Pan, where I think there was a cafe where you could buy cakes and stuff.
What did you feel when the armistice was declared? You know, what were your feelings?
Well, we didn't seem to make much great fuss about it. I don't see how we could, except a bit of a band went out with Dixies and Mestin and, you know, churning the row up, and they somebody stopped them because they said it wasn't peace, it was just an armistice. And then I got leave home on about the 10th or the 11th or the 12th of November. I was still with this artillery unit. Yes, because on the 10th or the 11th, this battery were loading up shells, and they were in basket works, and in the limbers was about perhaps, they would hold about perhaps, how many would they hold perhaps? I'd say 20 shells. And these were very delicately fused, and each shell had a protective cap on them, and they were loading these into these baskets and, you know, pushing them home. And unfortunately, one of these shells that they loaded up hadn't this protective cap, and it exploded, and I think one or two men, if they weren't killed, one or two were badly injured on about the 10th or 11th of November.
You were a very young man when war started.
Yes.
And probably you were quite a mature person when it ended in 1918.
I suppose so.
Did it have a big effect on your life, the World War One?
I don't know that it did really, but I had to settle down in the bank, you know, and I never used a pen for 4.5 years.
It's still very vivid in your mind, isn't it?
Yes, but I settled in pretty well. But just as although I was perhaps then 24, I settled down in a very junior position.
Do you find you had learned things through the war, though? Particularly, you know, dealing with other men? Had you sort of learned lessons?
I think so. You could stick up for yourself, you know. You could stick up for yourself. You won't be pushed around so much. But I was very grateful to come back to a job, because there were just as many unemployed as there are now, because all the munition works simply packed up, like Armstrong Whitworth in Manchester, or Metropolitan Vickers in Trafford Park. I think they employed about 20,000 people in Trafford Park.
Yes, it must have been quite a different world that you returned to.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Barry, thank you very much indeed for sharing so many of your experiences with us.
Mm.
Thank you.
It takes me back.